This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of December 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up on this Friday afternoon, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzolo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Gary Schnipke will be here with some information about the base acre allocation landowners will be making in the next 2 months in preparation for the Farm Bill ARC and PLC decision. And we'll take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets with Ben Pruce out at the Andersons Everly facility in Iowa. Oh, and Ed Keezer will help us round up our first half hour of the program, the closing market report with a look at the weather forecast. And then if you can, stick around on our home radio station. Our Commodity Week program comes up in the second half hour. Our panelists for that include Ellen Dearden, Chip Nellinger, Brian Stark, and Mike Zuzolo. So it all happens over this next hour. Stay with us all the way through if you can, half hour if you cannot, and find us online always at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit at $4.10.5 were down a half for the day. In the March, the May futures at $4.19.5 lower. In July, $4.26 down a quarter. September futures down a quarter as well at $4.28.25. December of next year at $4.35, up a quarter. In March of 2016 at $4.43.5. That's up a half of a cent for the afternoon and the day. Soy complex now, January beans down 4.5 cents, 10.30.5 the final trade. March at 10.38.5 down 4.75. The May futures at 10.46 down 4.25. And July down 4 at 10.52. August futures 10.50.75 down 3. September down 2 at 10.32.5. And November beans of 2015 at $10.17.5. Down 2.25. Bean meal futures finished at $3.63.50, down $1.80 in the bean oil on the day at $31.97, up 8 cents. Chicago soft red winter wheat at $6.32.25, down 23 in the March. July down 19.75 at $6.34.25. The Kansas City hard red at $6.66 in the lead option, down 17.75. July down 16.25 for the harvest month hard red at $6.72. Live cattle futures in Chicago on this afternoon at 161.25, or $2.55 higher for the December contract, and we'll have more in just a moment.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
And the February live cattle will continue at that marketplace in Chicago, up $1.75. That was at $160.27.5. The April there at $159.65 were up $1.45 of the day. Feeder cattle in Chicago at $220.20. A gain today, up $3.12.5. Some relief for them. A March contract at $217.87.5, up $4.10. And the lean hogs on the day, the February futures at $81.80 were down 7.5 cents. Outside markets, crude oil for the afternoon, $56.91 a barrel, up $2.80. Heating oil or diesel fuel, that's at $1.98 2 cents, up 4 4/10 of a cent. And the gasoline on the RBOB or wholesale price, 4 8/10 higher at $1.57.5. Ethanol futures there trading at $1.62.25. They are above the price of gasoline, down 2 cents for the day. Still, natural gas at $3.48.25, 16 cents lower. From the Dow Jones Industrial Average, we see a current trade at 17,819 points or thereabouts, up around 33 points. The U.S. Dollar is now trading at 89.83. That's up 0.353, and gold futures at around $1,196, or about $1.75 higher for the afternoon. Let's check the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. Mostly sunny skies, a high of 35 degrees. Tonight, cloudy and 24. Tomorrow, cloudy and 36 tomorrow night. Cloudy and 25 Sunday, partly sunny and 39. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Let's check the marketplace at this hour with our regular Friday analyst, Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting and not on the western side of the Corn Belt in Atchison, Kansas today, but rather traveling, much like I have been all week. This time around, he's in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Mike. How are you there in Ohio today?
Skies and no lake effect snow right now, so I'm hoping I get that last flight out of here for the afternoon and then get to Chicago and see exactly whether I get back to Kansas City or not.
Well, good luck making it all the way back. Hey, some things that have been happening for the week, and maybe we should start with the day. I've been on the road a lot. I believe there was a cattle on feed report that was just released. Is that right?
Yes, there was, and it didn't have a lot of surprises in it. The on-feed as of December 1st came in at 101. That's right around the average trade guess of 101. Placements during November coming in at 96%, very close to the average trade guess, and marketing's also coming in at 89%. That's a little bit low of 90.1% average trade guess, and this is all based upon the Reuters updates. So, you know, you got a little bit of a negative bias, maybe a somewhat negative bias in the marketings because they're a little bit slower than the trade was expecting. But as far as placements and on feed as of December 1, pretty much neutral.
Apparently, either the trade was expecting something different today, or they just decided to bounce. It's been really ugly for the live and feeder cattle for the last week or so.
I really think that the feeder cattle have had a very strong move based upon computer model trading and the algorithmic trading, because they went down limit for five sessions in a row. The CME group came in, I think, yesterday and announced an emergency action, raising the limit, saying that the price discovery was not being allowed to happen. And you know, I don't know how to read that, but as soon as those limits were raised, it seemed as though the market wanted to turn back around. And so I think you had a substantial amount of computerized trading liquidation. I think they've been pretty heavily involved, those computerized traders, in buying feeders and selling corn for most of 2014. I wonder whether they're not unwinding and unwrapping that spread, or have been unwinding and unwrapping that spread, partially because of the fundamentals in corn, but partially maybe because it's just going into the end of the year. So it has been a very violent, volatile market, and looks very much like crude oil earlier this week, and looks kind of like corn earlier in the year.
Well, hopefully they'll learn something from that at the CME group and be able to figure out how to make price discovery work a little bit better. 5 days in a row is a long time to be locked.
Agreed, and had a lot of cattle guys calling me back in Kansas and other places while I was on the road wondering whether this was the place to buy. And I do think that these feeder cattle prices are down there at this point, where getting a little bit of purchases in place would be a good idea if you don't see any more negativity come out of Russia. And, you know, you don't have to see a lot more negativity come out of Russia before they go just right back into a Soviet era or Soviet style economy. So if we see things cool off in Russia, we see things cool off in the dollar, I think this might be a place not only for feeder cattle purchases for the winter, but also this is where I'm recommending people start getting into the diesel market and getting their spring needs locked in.
Right. So let's see. Let's go ahead and talk a little bit about, you mentioned diesel fuel, and while we're at it, we may as well talk about crude oil, the price of crude and how it relates to gasoline and diesel and what producers ought to be doing for the coming season. You're suggesting that this may very well be a good place to begin locking in some fuel needs for the coming year?
Yeah, I think that it has come down quite a bit. I'm hearing $215, $220 for spring transport load prices, and that sounds about a dollar lower than what we've been dealing with here the last year. The stocks this week from the Department of Energy came in lower than trade estimates. We're still barely in the five-year trading band right now, and we quite frankly go into a time period here, Todd, where we can't build production because, or stocks, because production seasonally goes down into April. And so I'm thinking that this crude oil break, because of the Russian situation and the dollar skyrocketing, could be an opportunity because we've fallen so sharply. And when you lose almost 50% in crude oil and you start to see that translate into the distillate supply, distillate prices, I think that might be an opportunity here, and that's what I'm going to be recommending. And the last thing that I looked at was the winter weather updates, and it's still looking very, very cold for most people's forecasts. So if that's the case, you're going to have difficulty building heating oil stocks as well.
What led the wheat market lower for the day?
You know, I think profit-taking, we essentially went up 13% in six sessions, and so that is just an amazing rally. I also think, given that Russian news has now culminated in exports indeed being pulled back, and that they're only going to allow about four countries to see their Russian wheat, is the latest, you know, that we've been finding out. I think these things probably combined would suggest that, hey, why don't we take some profit towards the end of the week? But I would caution, and I've been on the mindset of hedging the wheat up at this 625, 640 level in a new crop July. I would caution that we really want to be careful about not overdoing it to the hedge side. Be conservative on your hedges. Be thoughtful on your hedges, because the Egyptian gas just came out this afternoon and said we're looking at tendering, and they've actually got U.S. soft red wheat back in the mix for the tender. And so you have to wonder whether the trade is ready for improving U.S. exports because of what's going on in Russia. Have we priced that in or not? And I think the best way to look at that technically is that this 200-day moving average, which has been resistance for many, many months, is now back as support on a weekly close right around 625 in July soft red wheat. So I want to see if that 200-day moving average holds or not next week as we go through the holiday.
Your view of old and new crop corn?
I still like holding the old crop corn at this point, simply because the cash market, I think, and the basis has some more upside potential to it as we get into the new year. And in 15 corn, I would be a little bit more eager to get some sales in place as we get into the holiday. And a lot of this has to do also with cost of production. Your cost of production is a little bit lower in the 15 crop. So this $4 cash price, $4.15 cash price, for, say, January 16 delivery, that's a profitable price. One client near Bloomington, I asked him what he was thinking about profitability at these current price levels. He said, I think I could probably swing about $50 an acre profit, and that's paying me a salary and taking care of all the bills.
And the soy complex.
I would suspect that, you know, I'm only about 10% left over with the 14 beans. I'm probably going to hold on to those as we go into the January-February time period, with the idea that maybe South America could have a weather play. New crop, though, is a totally different situation. If you prioritize your hedges, I'm suggesting be more aggressive in beans, followed by wheat, and then running up the bottom of the stack hedging the new crop corn. So I think being 40 to 50% of your 10-year production in beans before you go open presents on Christmas morning may not be a bad idea if you get up back up to that 1025 to 1045 level.
I know they were preliminary numbers. They'll come out in February, but USDA yesterday posted some numbers to its website, taking an outlook at the marketplace. They're very preliminary, and they're longer-term numbers. Did anything in those surprise you, make you go, oh, I didn't realize that, or were they ho-hum?
I was surprised they took the beans over 500 million bushels, especially since they let these out so much earlier than they normally do. And it makes me wonder how the bean-corn ratio and the funds are going to play this after we get done and come back from the holidays. Are these numbers going to create an environment where the trade tries to buy more corn acres because they take the USDA numbers seriously? So that did surprise me, Todd. I thought they would probably hold below 500 million on their baseline numbers.
All right. Thanks so much, Mike. You have a great holiday.
Todd, Merry Christmas to you, your family, all the Will Radio family, and also all our great listeners. Happy holidays.
Thanks so much, Mike. That's Mike Zuzula, of course. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Comes to us from Cleveland, Ohio today, where he's been traveling. Hopefully he'll have safe travels back to Atchison, Kansas. We'll catch up with him again on our regular programs and Commodity Week immediately after this program on our home website at willag.org and on our home radio station at WILL and many of these radio stations tomorrow morning.
Toyota. The
Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you can check out our January winter meeting season schedule. Actually, January, February, March. It's really packed. You'll find meetings there that are listed. We don't have quite all the details, but you'll find dates and some of the places. Put one of those in your schedule. We'll be looking forward to seeing you as we get out in 2015 to see our audiences and talk to you a little bit about commodity markets. You'll be, of course, able to ask directly many of the folks that are on stage with us questions about your particular farm. That's all on our website at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Just look in the Outlook meeting schedule link over on the right-hand side of the page. Now here's Dave with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, Russia's National Association of Agricultural Products Exporters today say that its members have suspended export operations and appealed to non-members to follow suit. The association, which includes major exporting companies and accounts for over 60% of Russia's total grain exports, says it has become impossible to honor export contracts because of the falling ruble and rising grain prices. The suspension of trading will last until domestic prices stabilize. Deere & Company has agreed to sell its crop insurance business to Farmers Mutual Hail Insurance Company of Iowa following a strategic review of the unit that began in September. The deal, which is expected to close in the first quarter of next year, includes the sale of John Deere Insurance Company and John Deere Risk Protection Incorporated, which together comprise the crop insurance business of John Deere Financial. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. USDA issued some of its 10-year supply-demand projections for major U.S. crops and livestock 2 months early yesterday to provide more current information to global commodity traders. The projections encompass the government's full intelligence about coming world supply, demand, and prices. The full data and analysis will be issued on February 11th of next year, ahead of the agency's annual Outlook Forum set for February 19th and 20th in Washington. Thai Union Frozen Products is acquiring Bumblebee Seafoods, a major seller of canned tuna in the United States, for $1.5 billion. The Thai company says today that the purchase of Bumblebee, which is owned by private equity firm Lion Capital, should be completed by the second half of 2015. The Thai company already owns Chicken of the Sea, another major U.S. provider of packaged seafood. Hundreds of farmers and trade unionists are protesting in Brussels today against negotiations to set up a transatlantic free trade zone. Farmers built fires and set off firecrackers close to the EU headquarters. The protesters worry that a transatlantic trade deal will weaken environmental protection standards and further decrease subsidies. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, is your Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. A great big thanks to Dave for filling in for me while I was out on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits this week and hosting the Ag Masters program here on campus on Monday. He'll be filling in a lot for me over the next 3 weeks or so as I'll be out on holiday and then after the first of the year on the road again for another 6 days with the corn and soybean class Six series. I hope to see you at one of those events. You can find them online at our WillAg website. Again, look in the Outlook meeting schedule event list and you'll find the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. Registration has closed, but walk-ins are always welcome if you'd like to come and see what the crop scientists from the U of I have to say. The Corn and Soybean Classics, you can just research Corn and Soybean Classics in Google if you want, look for crop science conferences if you want, or come to our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. From University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, we're joined by Gary Schnicke, Farm Business Farm Management Specialist at the U of I, to take up the reallocation of base acres, or potentially the simple allocation of base acres, as related to the ARC and PLC farm bill decision. Gary, what is the process that will need to take place by land owners as it relates to the allocation of base acres? Where do they start?
Yeah, so this is the landowner decisions, and they are going to have to choose between one of two alternatives for the allocation of base acres in crop. They have actually received the first one, and that's an August 2014 letter from FSA, and that letter listed the acres in corn, soybeans, and wheat, and the other program crops.
This was a letter that had a date on it, said you need to contact us soon. That date has already expired, so there's probably nothing yet to do there. Maybe you can explain what producers and or their landlords need to consider at this point.
Yep, so they got that letter, and that had one base acre allocation in it, and they can keep that, or they can update it to the other one, which is based on their average plantings from 2009 to 12.
Okay, so the letter showed what their previous base acres were, what they've been operating under for a decade or more. And so now we're looking forward to base acres in the 2014 Farm Bill going forward.
Yep. And so they can keep that current base acres, or they can update it. And they can update it to the proportion of plantings from 2009 through 12. And those plantings were given also in that 2014 letter. So both sets of information are given in that letter.
For what reasons would you keep the old allocation, and for what reasons would you update to a new allocation?
From my standpoint, the decision is fairly simple. You look at the two allocations. They're going to have the same total base acres in it. The allocation won't change the total base acres, but it will change which crops have the most acres. And I would tend to choose the allocation with the most corn acres in it. So if it's a choice between an allocation with 75% acres in corn, 25% acres in soybean, versus a 50-50, I would choose the one with the most corn acres.
If I have a base, for instance, which has wheat acres in it, had not been updated for a couple of decades, is there a reason to keep the wheat acres? And does that depend on where you are in the state, whether you still have wheat in the rotation? What kinds of items would you consider?
Yeah, so if you have wheat in your base, and this would be probably more of a southern Illinois situation, what we would expect, and these acre allocation decisions impact what PLC, what acres they will pay on in the future, ARC and County and PLC. The way it looks is corn will pay the most, wheat the second, followed by soybeans. So the standard rule is if you look at those two allocations, pick the one with the most corn and the least number of soybeans, and wheat sort of just falls out of that decision. For southern Illinois farms, it's probably going to be a choice of minimizing the soybean acres, because a lot of southern Illinois farms will also have double crops, so they could have a lot of soybean acres, which are projected to pay very little over the next 2014 to 2018 crop years.
Thank you so much. That, of course, is Gary Schnicke. He's with the Farm Business Farm Management side at the University of Illinois, a member of the FarmDoc team. You can read more from him on FarmDoc Daily at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu.
Support comes from
AgriGold. Todd Gleason.
A major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
It's National Popcorn Day. Popcorn first became a hit in the U.S. during the Great Depression, especially in movie theaters, where it was often sold at 5 cents a bag. By the way, at least six cities claim to be the popcorn capital of the world, including Valparaiso and Van Buren, Indiana, and Ridgeway, Illinois. On this day in agricultural history in 1736, James Watt was born, a Scottish inventor. His steam engine contributed substantially to the Industrial Revolution. In 1813, Sir Henry Bessemer was born, an English inventor and engineer. He developed the first process for manufacturing steel inexpensively. In 1825, Ezra Daggett and Thomas Kensett of New York City were granted the first U.S. patent for food storage in cans. They had been canning seafood since developing the process in 1819. Tin cans had been used by the military and explorers since at least 1813, but their development did not really take off until after the Civil War. And in 1915, George Claude of Paris was issued a U.S. patent for a neon tube advertising sign. Claude introduced neon signs in the U.S. in 1923. The Packard car dealership in Los Angeles purchased a pair for $2,500. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this December the 19th. It's a Friday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. I've been on the road most of the week. Thanks again so much to Dave Dickey for filling in for me as I was out with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. And for each and to every one of you, please do have a fantastic Christmas and winter holiday. And thanks to all those folks who came to the Illinois Farm Economic Summits in the last week as well. Now, let's take a quick look at the weather forecast. Here's meteorologist Ed Kieser.
As we approach the end of 2014, it is a good time to review the South American growing season so far and look ahead to the new year. While weather is rarely, if ever, ideal across all South American corn and soybean production areas, their summer season is starting with little in the way of weather-related problems. At this stage, crop yield potential is high. Of course, there is a long way to go. I'll break down the season so far from north to south. Starting in center-west Brazil, including Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Goiás, soybeans and first crop corn have been in the ground for a while. About half of Brazil's soybeans are grown in this region. Above average rainfall has been reported across this area during the past month, and adequate to abundant rainfall is expected during the next couple of weeks. That is keeping soil moisture favorable for developing crops. Across southeast Brazil, including Sao Paulo and Minas Gerais and neighboring Bahia, where about half of Brazil's first crop corn is grown, rainfall has been near to above average during the past month. Thus far, soils are favorably moist, with that likely to continue in the coming weeks. In South Brazil, including Rio Grande do Sul, almost half of Brazil's first crop corn and about a third of Brazil's soybeans are grown. In recent weeks, dry pockets have been expanding across South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay. That dryness has not become a problem yet, and now it won't, as abundant rainfall has just returned to end the dry threat. Even with dry weather expected again during much of Christmas week, temperatures will remain seasonably cool to keep evaporation rates down. The bottom line, conditions are returning to favorable across most of South Brazil and neighboring Paraguay. Finally, the area with the roughest start to the season is Argentina. Frequent heavy rainfall slowed planting. Drier weather of late is now allowing planting of corn and soybeans and harvesting of winter wheat to finally make rapid progress. While occasional scattered thunderstorms are expected during the next couple of weeks, enough dry weather in between should keep field work on track. While no weather-related problems of note are in progress in South America now, it is a long season. We'll continue to update you as we move through 2015.
That, of course, is meteorologist Ed Kieser. Our thanks to him for the update of the South American weather forecast. A couple of notes about the coming 2 weeks. Dave and I will be mostly off during that period. I am definitely going to be gone on a holiday of sorts for the next 2 weeks. Dave will be filling in for me, and he'll be in and out. The programming content will be here each and every day, but most of it will be pre-produced. There's some awfully good programs that are coming upcoming, including information from our Farm Assets Conference. So if you've been looking for that on the web or waiting to hear it on the radio, that comes up in the next 2 weeks. Thanks so much for listening. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.